Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Electronics have become the perennial favorite for gift givers at the holidays, but also an increasingly complicated decision for the gift giver to make. Here to talk and offer his advice on what to make of the electronics market this 2010 holiday season is Consumer Reports senior web editor Paul Eng. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thank you.
Black Friday has passed. The day after Thanksgiving, that is, and all the big sales supposedly have passed as well. But are there still good deals and affordable electronics out there now?
Yeah, you can definitely find still good deals. Black Friday certainly drew a lot of the hoopla. But even before Black Friday, we saw some great deals. I think retailers in general are a bit nervous with given the economy and the sales that we've probably seen generated over Black Friday have been good, but you know, there's always adding to the bottom line, so there's always good deals to be had, both online and in stores.
So what's really cool and new out there this year? Anything, or is it just variations on a theme at this point?
We're seeing fairly a good mix of things. TVs are still very popular, digital cameras as well. But I think that this year we probably are beginning to see a step toward interconnectivity, a lot of it having to do with set-top boxes, things like Roku, Apple TV. You hook them up to your internet, and you stream online content from the net through these boxes onto your TV. These are add-on boxes, obviously, for older TVs, but a lot of new TVs, too, are coming with some sort of internet connectivity, whether it's just simple web browsing or even access to online content like Netflix or Amazon or YouTube videos. So we're starting to see a lot of that home kind of networking, everything that you can get on the web now in your living room and on your TV.
Is there something out there for people who really are on a budget, something this year that the price went down on that we can avail ourselves of if you're tight on money and you want to get a cool gift?
Well, certainly we're starting to see a lot of price drops on technology that has certainly matured a lot. Digital cameras, for example, you can get a really good digital camera with a very good features for, you know, in the hundreds. Some, you know, if you want to skimp on some features, you can probably get some that are just a tad below 100, but for $150 or $160, you can get a really nice digital camera with a high megapixel count, but more importantly, with a very good lens, a very sharp and high-quality picture capabilities, as well as things that are kind of at the end of their, not at the end, but it's certainly at the very top level of maturity, GPS standalone units, for example, a lot of the units that used to cost hundreds of dollars are now dropped into the low to mid-range $100 price point, mainly because we're starting to see GPS capabilities carried into other things like cell phones and built into cars. So demand for it is kind of peaked, but if you have an older car without GPS and you still have a cell phone without smartphone capabilities or GPS navigation, a standalone GPS unit is very good.
Yeah, I was getting directions to Cleveland last night at the band concert. It was driving me nuts. You know, I'm like, can't we just do one thing at a time?
Yeah, but, you know, if you think about it, though, it is kind of interesting. I mean, GPS, I wasn't that long ago that I didn't have a GPS unit. And now that I have it, and now I have it on my smartphone, I'm like, how did I ever live without this thing? You know? And the capabilities that you can get with GPS through smartphones is very interesting because, as I was showing a colleague of mine, did you know that, you know, on a smartphone, I have an Android-powered phone, I can just speak, hey, find me the nearest ATM, and if I'm in my car, my GPS capabilities turn on my smartphone, the map will automatically pop up, it knows where I am, and it finds all the GPS units or ATM nearby, and I can just press another button, and it gives me directions right to it. That's the kind of capabilities that people in, you know, just a few years ago had and only in, you know, high-level luxury cars built into the dashboard. And, you know, the problem with those GPS units was that, you know, you had to get the update every year so that it could know that the ATM at the corner is really at that corner versus, oh, you know, it's shut down, it's no longer there. But now with all this capability in your smartphone, and it's all updated in real time, you know, every time a map gets updated, it could be on your phone or sent to your phone. So it really is a very nice burgeoning capability that we have now in our little phone. Whereas, again, it was just a few years ago, you had to buy a dedicated unit that cost hundreds of dollars.
You know, I read that some digital camera sales are going to be going down this season because of the use of the camera phone, the phone or the cameras on our phones. But in that, you know, 200 or less range, what digital camera out there do you recommend?
One of the good cameras that we recommend that rated very well in our ratings was the Canon ELF ST1300. We found that it takes really good pictures. It has, I believe, a 13-megapixel count. And the one thing that, yeah, I sort of understand, but, you know, digital cameras, sales may be going down because we have a digital camera on our phone, right? We always carry our phone around with us. But the problem is that, you know, cell phone cameras have improved a lot over the last years, but they're still it's more than just megapixel count, which a lot of these phones are touting.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the quality of the lens.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, the electronics inside.
Well, no zoom, too.
Yeah, no zoom. There's no optical zoom. We always prefer optical zoom because it's a mechanical movement of the lens, and you're really zooming in on the image just like you would with a manual camera. Digital zooms, what they do is they trick the enlargement process by basically taking out pixels and then making the pixels that they do capture bigger. So, you know, the image quality that comes out from a digitally zoomed image isn't as good as if you had a mechanical zoom. So, you know, there is a case to be made for a separate digital camera because it will offer all these capabilities that aren't in a cell phone camera. One of the great features that we always love in a digital camera, for example, is image stabilization. Now, there's, again, various numbers of ways they can do it, but image stabilization in a digital camera is pretty much standard, whereas in cell phones, you're lucky if you take that shot, it doesn't take 2 seconds to take the shot, and it isn't a blurry shot because it doesn't have the capability in it. But, you know, digital cameras, because they're dedicated to the task of taking a picture for you, has all those other electronics that are built into it that will give you the capability of taking that really great shot that can't be matched yet by a cell phone camera.
My guest is Paul Eng. He's Consumer Reports senior web editor. We're talking about electronics and other gadgetry electronic gadgetry that would make great holiday gifts this year in 2010. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. If you have a question for Paul, you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. If you want, you can Twitter at Ann Fisher WOSU. What about haggling? Is that possible in this day and age to work down a price on an electronic gadget or electronic, any kind of electronics?
Sure. I mean, well, it's harder to do online. But if you're going to a store, you're dealing with a salesperson, it's possible. I mean, it certainly doesn't hurt to ask. And I think that the closer that we get to the final holidays of the season, Christmas, you know, Christmas falls on a Saturday this year, which makes it a little tough. But, you know, Christmas Eve, some stores are probably still going to be open, and they're always looking to seal that last-minute deal. So it doesn't hurt to ask, can you get a better price? Certainly, there's a lot of tools that will help you manage a really good price. We have advice on consumerreports.org about a lot of tips about how to haggle. One of the best things to always have is evidence of a cheaper price. If you go to a store and you see it for a price, how do you know that's a really good price? Well, you got to do your research before you go to the store. You know, last-minute sales circulars, if you go in with, you can get a rough idea of what the price is. But also, if you do your searching online, you know, print out, you know, the page from Amazon that shows you how much it is. And if it comes with free shipping, things like that, you can always use to present to the salesman, hey, look, you know, I'm willing to give you the sale, but can you meet this price? Can you do that? And they may fight back, well, you'll get it right away. You don't have to wait for shipping, blah, 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 blah. But usually there's some room to haggle.
In the 5 holiday shopping traps to avoid in the current issue of Consumer Reports, 3 seem particularly appropriate for electronics. One is the extended warranty issue. you know, they've survived. People must be buying them or they wouldn't be selling them. But are they worth it? I'm just, you know, I'm the person whose car goes right on the fritz the day after the warranty expires. So
right. Well, here's the deal. A couple of years ago, I think it was last year, we took out a huge ad campaign to tell people, look, it's not worth buying an extended warranty. The problem with extended warranties is that they are capitalizing on your concern that, you know, something's going to go wrong with this set, and there's a peace of mind that, you know, oh, theoretically, if I bring it back or call them, they'll take care of it. Our surveys kind of showed that, you know, it's very rare that something catastrophic will happen to your electronic device within the warranty coverage of what they're offering. Usually the extended warranty is to double it or a year or 2 years, they're adding on to it. But the issue is that most electronics already come with either a 90-day or 1 year warranty service for free. And then you're asked to tack on another certain percentage point of the sales price of the item. And it overlaps that original warranty in most cases. So you're not getting any extra – you're getting another year out of it rather than, 2 years added on to the – after the one-year manufacturer. So instead of 3 years, you know, coverage, which is what you would think we get in a product, you're only getting 2 years. And within that 2 years, you know, our reliability study says that it's very rare that a product will fail in that point. So you're paying for this money to them on the off chance that something will happen to your product. And then there's always kind of the sort of concern, well, if it does, you know, something does happen to my unit, is it covered by the warranty? And you know, there's a lot of wiggle room in that extended warranty that says, well, if it's abused, we're not going to cover it, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, who defines what that abuse is? If I drop my camera once, is that abuse? Or, you know, will they say okay? So you're really kind of paying money for a future event that may or may not be covered and may or may not even happen. Our kind of better advice is, well, you know, instead of paying them, see if there are other alternatives, like many credit cards like American Express and others will offer automatic coverage for certain items. So check with your policy. And if you're worried about it getting stolen or misplaced or whatever, a lot of already your personal liability coverage through an insurance company already, whether it's automobile insurance or homeowners insurance, will cover it there too. So you really have to, I mean, you know, our advice is never kind of to fall for that trap if you want to save a whole lot of money, because if it's a certain – if it's a, you know, $2,000 TV, they're going to charge you $200, $300 or some percent point of that price. And, you know, for that, you can probably – buy just a better machine or an add-on unit like a Blu-ray player or whatever, or better yet, even take that $200 and sock it away in a savings account, and at the end of 2 years, you'll probably at least have, you know, enough to downpay another, you know, pay as a good deposit for another TV if you had to replace it.
Well, let's take a break right now, then we'll get back to a couple of those traps to avoid when we return into our conversation with Paul Eng. He's Consumer Reports senior web editor. We're talking about gadgets you can get for Christmas, get for holiday gifts this year if you want, and it's always a popular item. So stay tuned. This is All Sides on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. It's easy to renew your WOSU membership. You can visit WOSU.org/renew to make your contribution for another year. Your online renewal means less paperwork for WOSU, and it means more of your donation supports the programs you enjoy. And while online, don't forget to set your membership to renew automatically. We can charge your credit card once a year or send you a reminder invoice. It's a quick, easy, and efficient way to show your support and help reduce on-air fundraising. Visit WOSU.org/renew for more information. And thanks for your support. A few snow flurries today, otherwise partly sunny skies, a high of 25. Cloudy tonight, a low around 10 degrees. Sunshine for Thursday and a high near 30. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guest is Paul Eng, Consumer Reports senior web editor. We're talking about stuff to buy at the electronics store for the holidays, for holiday gift giving, or for yourself if you're one of those. Paul, another trap to avoid, the return policy limitations. I noticed that there are more limits and shorter return times for electronic stores when I was researching.
Yeah, return policies, that's our latest campaign for this year. Like I said, mentioned last year, we tackled extended warranties. This year, so we're tackling return policies. Retailers have gotten very kind of crafty. I wouldn't say crafty, but they're concerned. There are a lot of pitfalls that you got to look at return policies now, especially when it comes to electronics. Retailers don't want to deal with a whole lot of returns at the end of the holiday season for obvious reasons. So there are a lot of gotchas that you got to look out for. A lot of them have tightened the return time frame. Mm-hmm. Used to be some stores used to have a generous 30-day return policy. Some of them still do, but a lot of them are tightening it down to 14 days, 20 days. So you really have a very limited time frame to return things. And then there are the charges that they may tack on. Electronics, typically, there was this restocking fee for many. Of especially larger ticket items, they don't, you know, there's a cost to the stores, and they're passing it on to customers that if you return something, a large item like a TV, they have to, you know, repackage it, they have to take it back into inventory, and then they have to ship it out to have it inspected to make sure that there's nothing damaged with it before they can resell it, and then they have to resell it at a lower price because it's an open item. It's no longer technically brand new, even though you may not have even opened it or even used it at all. You would typically see restocking fees on things that were that had a lot of handling that you had to do. Like if you buy a new computer, a lot of times you buy a new computer, you open it up, you turn it on, and the minute you turn it on, you have to go through all these steps to personalize it. You know, telling you mm-hmm. who you are, where you know, and give credit cards numbers if you're signing on for online service, which a lot of these computers have. And then after you do all that and you decide you don't want it anyway or it doesn't perform to your needs, you take it back to the store. The store has to actually go through the process of resetting that machine for the next customer who will buy it so that they can go through that process without seeing all your personal data. So all those things, all those steps the stores had to do, it costs them money, and then they pass that on to you. So you have to be concerned about that. Some of the other things that we're also seeing is that stores are requiring IDs. When you return something, whether it's a credit card or a driver's license, in essence, it seems like they almost want to track, well, is John Smith here returning this? Is he what they call a serial returner, always buying something and then within the return policy returning it because he's used it for 14 or 20 days and then decides that he doesn't want to pay for it, so he's returning it to us. So you have to be careful about that too. And then, again, a lot of return policies – If you see that great bargain on an item, and it's because it's either an open, what they call an open box or refurbished, a lot of those have restrictions too that you can't return it because it was someone else's return. So you're kind of almost not stuck with it, but there are other kind of fees they may charge of you. Well, if you return it again, we have to do this whole thing again. So for that low price that you're getting for a return item, you may have to also jump through hoops to see if you can return it or you can't.
It seems, you know, now that you're talking about it, it seems to me that if you're buying somebody a computer for a gift, it's a very personal thing to buy them, actually, and maybe it's something that you go with them to buy or give them a gift card and do it that way to make sure they get what they want.
Well, the gift card brings a whole other set of problems, issues with it. But, you know, typically, you know, yeah, you're right. Computers and laptops, they tend to be more personal, and it is sometimes, you know, for a non-tech, for example, non-geeky person to figure out what someone really wants or needs. So, yeah, that's a good advice to take that person with you or better yet, you know, if you have an idea of what you want to spend for that person for a laptop, you know, my personal option has always been, you know what, if I don't want to take them to the store to buy it, I'll write them a cash or you know, write them a check or give them cash for that amount and say, put this toward whatever machine you want to buy, you know, and that's my gift. I know sometimes, you know, it may seem like a little impersonal, but, you know, you're actually thinking of the person and saying, look, I don't want to assume too much about what I think that you want. Take this and use it for what you really do want.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to join the conversation, have a question or comment for Paul Eng. He's Consumer Reports Senior Web Editor. We're talking about electronics for the holidays. And Rick, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I've got a digital camera question. I have an old Olympus OM2 SLR camera, and I've got a couple of really nice lenses. And I'd like to be able to use those lenses on a new digital body. Does Olympus or any of the other manufacturers make just a digital body that you can use the old autofocus lenses with?
Okay. Digital SLRs have, like Olympus, they do have their own kind of mounting system for lenses. I'm not 100% sure what mount the Olympus cameras uses, and if they carried it over from the film camera bodies that were sold, you know, a few years ago to the digital cameras, digital SLR versions. I'm pretty sure they do. The best way to figure out is to go to a camera retailer, specifically a good photography shop if you can find one. That may be a little difficult, but you know, pro camera shops should be able to tell you if you have a camera lens that you currently use with the camera. Take it with there and see if they do fit whatever digital body you're looking for. Typically, I'm almost 100% certain that Olympus does carry it over from film to digital, but the best way to do it is just take your lens, if you have it, to the camera body and ask them or see if it'll fit. Failing that, I would be wary of adapters, just because, you know, from my own experience, I know that adapters will save you money, but there's a chance that if you're forcing a camera, a lens into a body that's not designed for, you could end up ruining kind of the mount, so which would lead to a costly fix. So I would typically stay away from adapters and go with the lenses that are designed for that specific body or camera body mount.
Thanks for that call, Rick. We have an email from a listener. They say a strong benefit of Kindle is that the paper ink format is very easy on the eyes. On the other hand, iPads and laptops provide full internet access and thus free content, but you are reading with a backlight. Is there a compromise, an internet full reading experience that is very easy on the eyes? What do you think, Paul?
Your reader is very astute. Yeah, one of the best benefits of Kindle is that it uses a technology called e-ink, and they design it to mimic as closely as possible the visual quality of ink on paper, and that's why it's in black and white only. It creates a very fine and sharp resolution, and it's very crisp, but unfortunately, if you want color, that's not here yet. The Nook Color, which is another e-reader that's being sold by Barnes & Noble, does add color, but it's not of the e-ink technology. And in some instances, or some cases, you can consider it like the laptop screen that you would have or a smartphone screen. It's based on the same LCD technology. And as your reader pointed out, or listener pointed out, it's hard on the eyes because it's backlit. You need a light source behind the screen in order to produce something legible with color. And that can get tiring. Even devices like the iPad, which many people who are using it and really love it, there are ebook applications from it. Actually, Kindle and Nook have applications that run on the iPad so that if you have an account with either of those booksellers, you can download books from their stores onto your iPad and read it. But, you know, your eyes do get tired because if you're reading in a dark room with a backlit screen, your eyes are focusing on the light, and it can I know there's some medical studies out there that say that, you know, the backlighting is really harsh on the eyes. There is technology that they are working on that will improve on that so that the hard lighting that's needed isn't as harsh, using LED lights, for example, or some other reflective type. And there's a lot of studies going on to it. Is it out available in the mainstream? Not yet, unfortunately. We'll maybe be looking at end of next year, 2011, or mid-year, we'll see more of this technology come out. But right now, there is no screen tech that would allow you to read, have the same experience as you would with a Kindle with the e-ink technology and have backlight and have color. They're still working on it.
The price of the Kindle is dropping. Is that the same with the iPad, too?
You know, iPad, they have a corner on the market of portable screen devices when it comes to, it's more than just an e-book like a Kindle.
Yeah.
Because it can do so much more. It can web surf if you have a Wi-Fi connection. If you have the 3G connection, wherever you have cell phone service with 3G, you can access the web and web surf. And it has, you know, because it's built on the iPhone operating system, it has a full web browser. It doesn't do Flash movies yet, but there are workarounds for that. So if you can stream content from online sites to the iPad if you have the proper tools and things like that. So it's much more than just an ebook. You know, again, ebooks like the Kindle and Nook don't have that capability. They're really designed for primary reading books. So that's why you're starting to see, I think, those prices come down to make it more appealing to people who really do just want a device to read books. Yeah, there's some rudimentary web surfing kind of thrown in more to help if you do want to read the New York Times online or things like of that nature. But also, since they have the connection anyway, like Kindle has a 3G connection to the Amazon store, so that if you're in the middle of, you know, if you're in the airport waiting for your next flight and you have a 3G connection, it says, oh, you know, I forgot to buy the latest, you know, Dale Brown book, for example. I can go to the store and get it and download it and have it on my Kindle in time for the flight and read it during the flight.
Have you heard the talk or articles and read them about people getting iPads for their toddlers or for their 5 and 6 year olds?
You know, I've seen it. I remember when the iPad first came out, there was a very cute video of, you know, some guy excitedly putting it in front of his 5 year old daughter, and she just, you know, instantly knew what to do. She was surfing the web and, you know, playing videos and mm-hmm. pictures and things like that. It certainly is very compelling, but at, you know, average about $500, it's a little much, I think, unless you have a lot of cash and you want to blow it on a kid. I think that probably an iPad for someone, a very young toddler, is probably not the best gift to give them. There are other things that you can use with, especially $500, that you can get many gifts for that same child.
They'll never appreciate it either.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and plus, you know, I kids drop things and spill stuff on it. You know, I'd hate for someone, you know, to see a beautiful piece of machinery like that wrecked by, you know, a toddler who just, oops, you know, I pressed a little too hard or I stepped on it. You know, that would hurt for me. But,
yeah, now that you mention that, all of right. that, if that doesn't kill the idea in the minds of a million people
yeah,
out there,
you know, I've seen ruined iPods, and it you know, it just really – it's such a wonderfully designed machine. You kind of like –
Such a shame.
Oh, yeah, it would be a shame.
What about the 3D TVs and laptops? You know, I guess from just going to the movie theaters, I think 3D needs to be life-size to be worthwhile, but they're gaining in popularity, right?
Well, there's certainly been a lot of talk about 3D TVs mm-hmm. ever since last at the beginning of this year at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas in January. A lot of has been made about 3D TV because 3D has been a very good, successful move for the movie industry. You think about all the big hits that came out in 3D TV, the animated movies, the Avatar, all the computer-generated movies. The effects that can be produced with 3D technology now is stunning in those cases. And so they would like to bring it to, you know, the home theater. And there are TVs that do it well, and there are TVs that don't do it well. And there's a variety of reasons why they may or may not work well for you, a lot of it being, you know, not just the TV, but the glasses that you have to wear for it. Some people find them uncomfortable. Some people find it, you know, a little bit distracting. Some eyes aren't physically, you know, adjusted or capable of using the glasses well without a headache, and it's, you know, it depends on the person how they're mentally wired, I guess, sometimes for depth perception. So, and add to that now that, you know, there are still very limited 3D content that you could watch at home. I mean, mm-hmm. cable companies and DirecTV satellite services are working on it, and they've introduced several channels of content, ESPN, some movie channels that show the 3D movies. But then, you know, there still isn't 24/7 broadcasting on 3D TV yet. Not like we did last year when the switch over to HD signals from standard definition. You know, every channel you had was now in high def. We haven't reached that point yet where every channel offers a 3D option. So you're really buying, if you buy into the 3D TV technology now, you're saying, you're putting your bets in that it will take off, that at some point in time, everyone will have 3D TV, but it still remains to be seen, will that happen? So your only true source of 3D content right now would be your Blu-ray DVD player, and if they made the movie in 3D, that they're going to release a 3D Blu-ray version of that so you can watch it at home. And then will you get the same effect in your theater? That's a little iffy. Personally, a 40-inch TV isn't the same as the 100-and-some-odd-foot screen at a movie theater,
right,
where you really are wowed by the 3D, and it really does feel like it's surrounding you. Visually, that would be hard to do on a TV that's 40 inches in a room that's, 10 by 10, for example.
We just have a few minutes left with Paul Eng. He's Consumer Reports' senior web editor. We're talking about electronics for the holidays. 614-292-8513 if you want to squeeze in a quick question or comment. Paul, you wrote about shopping apps, one in particular, the mobile shopping app from Consumer Reports. It lets you scan barcodes to find product ratings right in the store. Is this true? Is this possible?
Yeah. Again, we come to, these smartphones, iPhone, any of the dozens of Android-powered phones that are out there. They all have a camera. A lot of people make mobile apps that will let you scan a barcode and then bring up, more details about it. Amazon, Shop Savvy, there are plenty of applications out there that will do that. Our version of this app, the mobile shopper app, where it really helps is that it's a paid app. Unfortunately, you can't get it free, but it's paid because what happens is when you scan a product, you see a TV at a store that you're really interested in, and there's the barcode for the box on it. If you have the consumer mobile app and you point your camera at your cell phone camera and you take a picture, the app is smart enough to know what that barcode is of for this TV model XYZ, for example, and go to our Consumer Reports online site, look for that model that is tagged to that barcode, and bring up the ratings. So you will know without having to remember to go to our site, type in the model number, and say, I was interested in this TV. What is it? And if we tested and rated it, you will find our ratings, what we really thought about, what all of our scientific tests in our lab, does it have really good picture quality, or does the speakers not sound very well? Was the reliability good? And if it turns out that that's a particular model that isn't in our ratings, we will send you to other links that will have more information about it, or give you information about that particular brand. So it may be a Sony TV that we haven't tested yet, but we can tell you that generally Sony's of this class or this type of TV did well or poor in our performance tests. You can expect this and this and this out of this particular brand, and then provide you with other options and other resources to find out more about that product. So you're not making a spur-of-the-moment decision to say, hey, this is a great price for a TV, or maybe it isn't, but, I'm going to get it. You'll have more tools available to you to determine if that's a really good buy for what you want.
We have run out of time. Paul Eng, Consumer Reports Senior Web Editor, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure to be here.
Appreciate it. Sorry about that. If you have questions, you can post them to the web. We'll try to get them to them. That's all the time we have right now, though. We'll be back with Rock of Ages tunes. Hope you can stay with us. This is All Sides on WOSU 820 NPR News.
The next Fresh Air with the WikiLeaks cables reveal about President Obama's approach to diplomacy with countries such as Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Russia, China, and North Korea. We talk with David Sanger, Chief Washington Correspondent for the New York Times. Join us.
Today at noon on WOSU 820, NPR News.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today on WOSU 820 NPR News. Go behind the scenes at WOSU with our e-newsletters. Find out what our classical music hosts are listening to. Get the latest news from NPR and the WOSU newsroom. Learn about volunteer opportunities and more. Just visit WOSU.org/email, and there you can sign up for one of our e-newsletters. It's 20 degrees in downtown Columbus, a few snow flurries today, otherwise partly sunny skies, a high of 25 degrees. Cloudy skies tonight, a low right around 10 degrees, and chilly for Thursday as well. Some sunshine, a high of 30 degrees. There is a chance of snow Thursday night, a low of 26. And looking ahead to Friday, a chance of morning snow, mostly cloudy in the afternoon, and a little warmer, a high of 38 for Friday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Just a small town girl, living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere.
Just a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit, Michigan.
Welcome back. You may recognize that song by Journey, which is from the musical Rock of Ages, based on classic rock hits of the 1980s, now being presented by Kappa at the Palace Theater. Today we have two cast members from the First National Broadway touring company of Rock of Ages. Patrick Llewellyn plays Lonnie, the narrator and overall linking pin or linchpin, I'm not sure, between the performers and the audience. Welcome, Patrick.
Hi. Nice to be here.
And Casey Tuma plays Regina, the mayor's city planner in the story. Welcome, Casey.
Thank you. It's actually pronounced Regina.
Regina.
We make a joke of it in the show.
I didn't get there last night because of that band concert, but I would love to because, of course, all the music is very familiar to me. And before we get to the fact that it couldn't have been familiar to you, you know, you weren't born then, can you give us an overview of the story for our listeners?
Sure. Rock of Ages is an 80s jukebox musical. It's kind of like Mamma Mia, but set with 80s music that we all know and love. And I was actually born in 1985, but I grew up listening to this music as well because it stayed highly popular. I sang
classics,
Pat
right.
Benatar hits with all my girlfriends in high school. The plot is sort of the boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back in the end with a lot of subplots. And Lonnie, who Patrick plays, kind of engages in the audience. His audience is the biggest.
Yeah, it's definitely the biggest
the
person
biggest
I act with.
Scene partner, yes, in the whole show. We actually encourage audience participation. And there are all these subplots, and Regina in particular, she is the city planner, and she and the mayor have a meeting with a German father-son team who want to take over the Sunset Strip, which is where all of this rock and roll started, and where all of Drew, who is played by Constantine Maroulis, and all of his buddies hang out at the Bourbon Room. So they want to tear it down and create this massive kind of Times Square-looking venue, and they offer the mayor a lot of money. And the mayor says yes, fires Regina, and it's basically everyone against the Germans trying to get the Sunset Strip back. In the meantime, Drew loses Sherry, this girl that's come into town, to an old kind of fading out rock star who's going out on his new album. And everything sort of comes together nicely in the end. But all of the 80s music is woven throughout the entire show. Our song list is actually not listed in the playbill because we want the audience to be surprised with every song that comes along and pops out of nowhere. There's a lot of surprises throughout the show. And
well, even in the day of Wikipedia, though, because they'll go through it point by point by
Absolutely.
Point, which helped me, I have to admit, and that helped me with the plot. But it was fun to see what song would pop up even
mm-hmm.
in the Wikipedia rundown. And let's just jump right in and, you know, what better thing to do with this show than to include some of the music? So let's see. Aspiring rocker Drew Bowie, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing all the words right now, works as a busboy in the Bourbon Room. He falls for Sherry, as you mentioned, a beautiful girl from Kansas who wants to be a movie star. And on a picnic overlooking Los Angeles, Drew sings her a song about his feelings.
I've been waiting.
Alrighty then. Tell me about how much fun it was to you. Did you grew up listening to a lot of the music?
Absolutely.
I'm sure, because they're classics. But how did it feel to put them into a plot?
Well, I visited New York about a year ago, and I saw this show on Broadway, and called my parents to intermission. I was like, "This is the most fun time I've ever had in my whole life. I have to do this show someday." And fortunately, it worked out. It's a simple plot. It's a cheesy plot. But if it was anything different, it wouldn't be as lovable as it is. And the music is, I mean, that's why you see the show. You see it for this music, and it's put to a comedic tone. And it's the classics that everybody knows. And a lot of times the audience members sing along with us.
Well, you were talking earlier about getting the audience involved, and there's audience interaction. Why that? Why is that important for this? Although I've seen it with a few others, it seems to be a little bit of a trend.
I mean, I always tell my friends when they're coming to see the show, I'm like, it's not your typical musical. It's more of it's a party. It's a karaoke party. You know, so study up on your 80s music and come prepared to sing with us.
And you like it?
Yes.
Love it.
If they're not singing, it would worry you.
There are times when they don't sing with us.
We sort of have to draw it out of them. You know, on opening nights in each theater, they give out little lighters. And so it's really great during Every Rose Has Its Thorn. I'm sleeping half the song. And to open my eyes and wake up and have this moment of awe and seeing all of the lights, because everyone has the lighters going and everyone's singing along, and I think to myself, God, I love my job.
Do they broadcast the lyrics or anything like that? Or are they not broadcast,
no.
But do they? No, it's just if you know it, you know
it.
If
you know it, you can sing along. There's definitely points in the show where we encourage it and we ask for it and whatnot. But a lot of the times the audience is so engaged in the performances as well that they just sit back and enjoy and hoot and holler and clap and they don't necessarily always sing along. There are certain numbers that don't call for that. And there are a lot of really awesome arrangements of the song. So it doesn't necessarily go streamlined like you hear it normally on the radio. There's a lot of background. There's background singers in every number. So
the band's right on the stage, too, which is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the scene. How does that work? How do they make the band not be a distraction?
We all feel like rock stars, first of all. I mean, we have this incredible band, you know, backing us the entire show. I don't know, right at the very beginning of the show, you know, we break that fourth wall that you're never supposed to break in theater, and we connect with the audience. The band takes part in that. You know, they actually have a couple lines throughout the show. So they're actually characters. We reference them numerous times.
They have costumes.
Yeah.
They have to wear costumes for the whole show.
What do they wear?
They wear kind
like
of
those glittery,
kind of rocker.
Shiny?
They all wear black and gray,
okay.
It's kind of like rocker or punk look. One of the guys has a really funny top hat that's leather, and it's so heavy. He takes it off halfway through, but he has these aviators too. I mean, they're so cool looking, and we introduce them as Arsenal in the very beginning of the show. That's the band's name, and they carry through with the plot. Arsenal has a new lead singer. Arsenal, you know, and they have lines.
Oh, I see.
So they're part of the show, but they do have to stay very still during the scenes.
No moving around and
no fidgeting.
Okay, let's do another one. Cut this later in the show. Sherry is fired from her job at the Bourbon Room and agrees to become a stripper at the Venus Club, and sings this.
All the night.
that song, the original by Quarterflash from 1981, is toward the end of Act One. Tell me about being in a musical that deals with that, well, maybe not so taboo, but somewhat taboo subject of stripping. Do you get a reaction to that or not? Is it that big of a deal?
I actually double as a stripper named Candy in the show, and
of
so
course,
I actually
Candy.
Yes,
of course she does.
So I actually participate in that in a couple of the stripping numbers. Candy is a transvestite, so whenever I open my mouth, I have a man's voice. It's not mine. I can't go that low. It's a double backstage, but it was definitely nerve-wracking at first to deal with the subject and knowing that you were going to be wearing very little clothing on stage. Mm-hmm. But we get a lot of hoot and hollers.
Yeah.
A lot of the times the audience is right there with us, and it's just really – it's really believable. And we never do anything too risque or something that would produce a really negative reaction from the audience. And it's a lot of dancing. Mm-hmm. It's very dancey.
Definitely.
Well, we're never stripping clothes.
Right.
No clothes really come off of us.
Whatever
to
you come out
anything.
With is what you're actually wearing.
Well, the Sunset Strip
yes.
has that seamy, obviously, the seamy
yeah.
underbelly to
yeah.
it. That's part of the whole
yeah.
romance or intrigue of
and
the whole thing.
And also the strip club owner, Justice, she becomes like a mama to the lead character, Sherry. And so there's definitely, I mean, it's not a degrading strip club. There's a heart behind it. And Justice sort of gives Sherry some beautiful advice towards the end when she says, Mama, I think I have to go. I have to leave. This is not me. I need to go back home. And so there's definitely that really nice added bonus to the strip club scene.
What are the costumes like from the 80s, which
wild.
I would say
crazy.
Is it's an era of clothes like music that goes from bad to great. You know, you could be wearing your duck shoes and your preppy outfits then, or your crazy rock clothes. But is it pretty much?
It's all over the board.
Yeah,
yeah, it's everywhere. The costumers did a absolutely phenomenal job. And everything is authentic.
Everything is custom
it's
made.
It's vintage or custom made.
Actually, everything Ooh. Is custom made that is on our bodies, except for, all of our underwears and things for this mm-hmm. stripping. I had 5 fittings to try to find the perfect underwear and bra. I mean,
and it looks great.
5 fittings.
It looks great. Well done.
But it looks great. But I'm a hippie. In the show, so I wear this big flowing skirt with suspenders and a flowy top and vintage glasses.
The round kind of
huge
tinted.
Huge round glasses, and I have a scarf in my hair, and I wear this big puffy sweater and sort of like Bourne shoes. But
kind of a granola type hippie thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've been compared to Gilda Radner a lot.
Now, there is a subplot, a love subplot for you as well.
Yes. I fall in love with a German boy.
With the German developer's son.
Yes, right. Who he has a funny line, and he says, I want to tell Regina that I love her. And the protesters say, oh, but we thought you were gay, because he's very effeminate.
Uh-huh.
And he says, no, I'm just German. So there's definitely a funny play. I'm a little masculine, and he's a little effeminate, and we sort of come together and make this goofy, funny
Works
relationship.
Perfectly.
Right, you fit.
Yes.
Let's do another cut from the show. After many travails and misunderstandings, Drew, now a pizza delivery boy and not a rock star, decides to go after his true love, Sherry, who left L.A. on a midnight train.
A dreamer. Oh, and I must have been someone else. Oh, and I should have been over. Oh, Sherry, I'm in love. Hold on, hold on. Oh, Sherry, I'm in love. Hold on.
All righty then. We won't give away the ending, but let's just say he does find Sherry again. Does the audience get carried away by the story and the music? Do they sing along with all the songs? And, you know, they do. Do they sing? Do they wait and mostly do the what am I trying to think of? Not the verses, but the choruses. Is that where you find they jump in?
And, absolutely.
Because that, I wouldn't necessarily know the words to the verses, but the chorus,
definitely
who doesn't know
choruses.
It?
The choruses. Every Rose Has a Thorn is a big one where people sing along,
mm-hmm.
As well as Don't Stop Believin', the last number in the show.
Right, of course. And I didn't say that that's by Foreigner, 1981. These are all the 80s. That is Oh Sherry by Steve Perry of Journey, 1984. Harden My Heart original by Quarter Flash, 1981. And I've Been Waiting for a Girl Like You by Foreigner, 1981 as well. Now, do your parents, they've seen this? Do
uh-huh.
they just,
oh,
like,
yes.
Oh, my God.
They love it. You know, I warned my parents. I was like, yeah, it's a little risque. You know, it's a little different than your typical musical. But they had the time of their life. My mom's come to 3 different cities. My dad and sister have come to 1 city and are planning on coming to numerous other ones. It's mm-hmm. it's a contagious show, and it's the type of show where once isn't enough. You'll see it once, and you'll crave seeing it again.
I would imagine the experience varies a lot from city to city, too. Like when you go to Detroit.
Yeah, oh, Detroit was great.
Oh, when in the song Detroit, Michigan, I mean, they went nuts. What's great about traveling is every city has a different dynamic, and every city has different kinds of audiences, and so it's fun to sort of figure out what makes them tick. And not that we can change the show in any way, but mm-hmm. it's just fun to know that they're going to love this moment, or,
yeah.
you know, they're going to love this song. And it kind of keeps it alive and fresh for us. It
kind of changes the way I approach my – I mean, I break the fourth wall. You know, I talk to the audience all mm-hmm. the time. It changes the way I approach it. Every city, because it's completely different.
But you use the same script, right?
Yeah, same script. But, you know, I put an accent here, or I do a pelvic thrust here, you know,
uh-huh.
things like that, depending uh-huh. on what city we're in and how the audience is reacting.
It's almost like you'd like to get through that opening night so you can see what they
yeah.
are responding
yeah,
to differently.
It's very playful, just very, very playful. And we say leave your minds at home, but yeah. it's kind of true. You just sit there and be prepared to have fun.
We haven't had a bad crowd yet. I mean, every crowd has just loved this show, just eaten it up. It's that kind of show. You know, you're going to get a few people who are like, this is too risky for my, you know, risque mm-hmm. for my taste. And
too loud.
Yeah, too loud. I mean, it's a rock concert.
Well, I would think Rock of Ages, I don't know, if you, why go?
Yeah, exactly.
you
can't tell what it's going
to
be from
music.
The title, you know.
So where are you headed next?
A layoff for 2 weeks.
Of course, the holidays.
Yes,
that's
good.
2 weeks off, which is so amazing.
Yeah, that's
so
not fortunate. That's not common with a lot of tours or productions.
So I'm going to Jamaica.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not. So where are you from?
I'm originally from New Jersey, okay. right outside Philadelphia.
Jamaica's good. How
yes.
about you?
I'm from Kansas.
And are we going home?
Born and raised, I am. I'm going back home. See my family and friends. It's going to be great.
How long have you been with the tour now? Were you original, I mean, from the beginning?
We're original cast members of the national tour. So we started rehearsals August 19th in New York. We rehearsed for 3 weeks in New York, mm-hmm. 2 or 3 weeks. And then we headed to Chicago to tech, and we opened on September
21st.
Something like that.
Something.
So this is pretty fresh for us. This
yeah.
is still really new. We're only 80-something performances in.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining the cast, and I hope you have a wonderful run, and I hope you have a great break.
Thank you.
After Columbus, put all your energy into it. It's probably a great way to think you got a break coming up. You can really, you know, give it all you've got. You're in Columbus for how much longer now? A couple more days?
Until Sunday night.
Until Sunday night. Okay. That is we're talking to Patrick Llewellyn and Casey Tuma, both in the show Rock of Ages. You can learn more about it. If you go to WSU.org, we'll have a link to Kappa and to more information about Rock of Ages. It's showing through Sunday. That's all the time we have for all sides. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.